I mentioned that we've all spent time in the waiting room, so we are doing this series, The Waiting Room, during a season that is completely dedicated to waiting. And really, this season kind of serves two different purposes. One purpose of Advent is that we are symbolically recognizing the period of time that Israel was waiting for their Messiah to come on Christmas Day. They didn't know when, they just knew that at some point God was going to send his Messiah into the world to be their salvation, to lift them out of oppression and put them in a place of prominence over all the other nations. That's what they believed was going to happen. So they were waiting, they were anticipating, and generation after generation after generation, they continued to wait in hope of this promise. And various different generations, there would be somebody who would be raised up and who would seem to fit the bill of their Messiah. But in the end, they would die or they would be conquered or something would happen that would clearly show that they were not the one who is coming for the ultimate fulfillment of God's promises to save Israel. And so as Christians, we recognize that history. We recognize our tie to our brothers and sisters in the Jewish faith. We recognize that we ourselves at different points in our life have waited for God's promise of salvation. And so we wait during this time as a symbol of that waiting that Israel did. But the dual purpose, the second purpose as Christians, is that we still are waiting, right? What are we waiting for? The second coming, I heard back there, okay? As they sometimes call it, the parousia, the coming nearness. God coming for all eternity to reside with humanity here on earth when he will recreate this earth, recreate the heavens, and he will make it permanent in our permanent place of residence. And we will be resurrected into bodies like Christ's body, and we will live for all eternity in his presence and in relationship with him. And so we await this. So the dual waiting of Advent isn't just that we are symbolically recognizing the waiting that Israel did, but we are also really recognizing the waiting that Christians have been doing for now some 2,000 years. And so we are still waiting for Christ to come back. So the cry of Advent is, God, come. Come, Emmanuel, come be with us. And it is not just a cry that we are doing as a symbol, but it is a real cry of Christians asking the Lord to return, to come back to this earth and make all things new. So waiting is a real thing for us. It's not just some kind of symbol. So I wanted to ask this question because I looked up how long we have been waiting in lines as Americans for our average lifetime. And the answer that I found online, and of course, everything online is true. So I'm going to run with this as though it's totally true, but it doesn't ring wrong to me that the average American spends 6 months waiting in line. Now, that's just waiting in line. How often do you wait for things where you're not necessarily waiting in line, right? Abstract things. We oftentimes wait for abstract things to happen that are harder and less tangible to kind of apply, or we wait for events, right? Sometimes when we're engaged to be married, we're waiting for our wedding date, right? When we are waiting, you know, in the month before our birthday, some of us who love birthdays, I don't. I hate them. Don't ever say happy birthday to me. I don't even want you to know when my birthday is. But those of us who love birthdays, right, in the month before, you want to make that whole month your birthday, right? You can't wait till it gets to be your birthday. Or Christmas. How many of us love the Christmas season, love Christmas Day, and can't wait to have it come every single year? Many of us, right? So we wait all the time for other things. So I would say that there's a huge portion of our lives that's just spent in waiting. We wait for things. It's just kind of part of our nature. So I wanted to ask this silly question. This idea of waiting in line for something. What is the silliest thing you've ever waited in line for? Someone raise your hand. I'm going to call on you. Alan Brailsford. How long was the line? About a mile. So how long did you have to wait a mile to get tickets to Elton John? Oh, What a good wife. How long did she wait, do you remember? 2 hours. Was the concert worth it? Oh, it wasn't even for you? Anybody else? Anybody else want to share something crazy you've waited for? Something silly you waited in line for? Yeah. Waiting to be born sometimes is rough too, huh? Anybody else? What did you wait for? Okay, back there. Beanie Babies. So I used to live in Santa Barbara and worked at a church there as a youth director. And the guy who started the Beanie Baby thing bought up like a ton of real estate in Santa Barbara, but he wasn't really from Santa Barbara. So every Santa Barbaran hated him because he came and bought up all the land. And it was all because of you and people who would wait in line for those Beanie Babies. But yeah, people wait in line for toys all the time, right? Somebody said Black Friday. Who said Black Friday? Chris, do you have a Black Friday story to tell us or anything? No? Not that you want to share in church? Okay. I have waited in line for a ton of ridiculous things. I've waited in line for video game consoles. I've waited in line for premieres of movies. I've waited in line for, you know, different electronic devices coming out or other toys or things that I wanted. I've waited in line a lot in my life. But being from California, the land of waiting in line, is even more. For some reason, my picture's not showing up. But I had a picture up here of a line at Cedar Point. How many of you guys have ever been to Cedar Point? How many of you have waited in line at Cedar Point for more than 2 hours? Keep your hands up. Okay, how many of you have waited in line for more than 3 hours? Keep your hands up. Okay, so 2 hours seems to be the limit. Is it, Lee, is it just that you just took off and you were like, forget this at some point? Yeah, and you went to another one. So there's a threshold, right? If you are waiting for a thrill that's only going to be about a minute and a half long, then it might not be worth it to wait in a four-hour line. But there's always that game you play. In California, we have tons and tons and tons of amusement parks because we're all shallow people, and we just like to amuse ourselves nonstop. And there's a lot of people in California, too. So there's just amusement parks everywhere, all across California. So you don't even really have to drive that far. No matter where you live in California, you can get to an amazing amusement park. So I spent just too much time of my life sitting in line for like a 30-second thrill, you know, for a minute and a half of fun. And yet there's a threshold, and you're always there. You know, there's that moment that you dread where you've been standing in line for like an hour and 15 minutes already, and you could see the front, and then what happens? The line closes, right? The ride shuts down because they have to do some maintenance on it, and you have to make that decision. Do I stay here and wait it out? Do I stay here and see if I can maybe get further up in the line and get up there so that when the ride starts again, I'm going to be, how long is the maintenance going to be? So you play that game in your mind, right? And it is all about what you're willing to wait for, what you hope in to get out of that ride. We all have seen Christmas presents that we have been excited about or we've all hoped for getting, right? And so we've been anticipating Christmas. Maybe most of us as kids, I don't know how many of us adults, how many of you as adults have really been waiting for a particular Christmas present? Okay, a few of you. I'd love to hear those stories, but we don't have time. As a kid, I told my mom that I can't tell stories because then she'll contradict my stories. Because everybody will go to her and ask her if it was true. So just don't go ask my mom if any of my stories are true, because they're not true. They're all fake. They all just imagine them as lies. But this is actually a true story. My mom and dad, one Christmas, bought me a video game console that I wanted really badly. And in fact, I used to sneak and cut open my gifts just along the tape line and then tape them right back over. See, I'm confessing. I already confessed to her. I already told her I was talking about this. But I used to go and I sneak and look and I saw that they had bought me the video games for this console, so I thought that they had bought me the console. But I opened all my presents and the console wasn't there. And I was like crushed because the console wasn't there. Do you even remember this? Yeah? So the console wasn't there, and so I said, well, you guys bought me the games for the console? And she was like, those won't work in your console that you have already? I was like, no, they're for the console I asked for. And so they let it go for like 10, 15, 20 minutes. And finally they said, oh, you know what? I heard some noise out on the patio last night. You might want to go check there. And that's where the console was. So they made me wait a little longer. They probably had some intuition that I was sneaking and looking at my stuff. But we all know what it's like to wait and hope for something that we really want or that we're really looking forward to. And as we do that, we got to remember, well, delete that top picture. There you go. Thank you. We all got to remember that this story we read today is something that is very real to us, that we have all waited in anticipation, we've waited in hope for something. And Abraham was waiting in hope that he would have an offspring that he could pass all of his land and his possessions down to, because that is how you remained remembered in the land at the time of all the cultures in the area. It was very much about your inheritance and passing it down in generation to generation. And so he really wanted some kind of heir that he could pass everybody down to. But he was 75 when God came to him and made a promise to him. And Abraham said, well, how could you fulfill this promise? I don't even have an heir. And God said, I will give you an heir. How many of you in here are 75 or older? Can you imagine being told you're going to have a child? No. I have 4 children. I'm only 35. I can't imagine having another one. I don't want to go through that at this point. And so imagine being Abraham, and he's waited his whole life, and he's never had a child. And all of a sudden, God has told him, as a part of his covenant, as a part of his promise to Abraham, he's going to give him his own flesh and blood heir. And then we remember this story. The story goes way past our passage in Genesis that we read today, and it continues on. Does anybody remember where it goes? Does Abraham get his heir right away? No. Does anybody know how old he was when he finally has his son Isaac? 100. So if he's 75 now, when God gives him this promise, how long does he wait until he gets his child? 25 years. 25 years. God's timing is not like our timing, right? Early Christians, when they heard Jesus talk about returning and coming back, they believed that Jesus was going to come back within a generation or two, and they fully anticipated. And in fact, every generation of Christians who have existed since Jesus ascended into heaven have believed that their generation, Jesus is going to come back. And yet, here we are, 2,000 years later, and he hasn't returned yet. And we have no idea when he will return. We can only be like every generation and expect that he is going to return now. And yet, God's timing is not like our timing. And God's timing is drastically better than our timing. And he has a reason for it. So Abraham and Sarah lived their lives. And many years later, when Abraham was already very, very old, they decided to take things into their own hands. They believed that maybe God was waiting for them to do something about this promise. So Sarah gave her servant to Abraham to produce an heir with. And of course, he has Ishmael. And God says to him, this is not the son I have promised you. I have promised you will have a son with your wife Sarah, and she will still give birth. And at this point, when she overhears this story, Sarah is listening behind a tree. And what does she do? She laughs, which is why Isaac is named Isaac, because it means he laughs, or she laughs. And so Isaac is promised, and Sarah doesn't believe it and just laughs, like really, seriously, this old, and I'm going to have a son of my own? And yet God fulfills his promise, because Abraham and Sarah still choose, despite the ridiculousness of it, to believe that God will fulfill his promise that he made when he made a covenant with them on that night. And he told Abraham that his descendants will be like the stars. And so they waited, and they waited, and they waited, and God finally gave to them their heir. And they were so pleased in him. And then what does God immediately do after that, just to mess with Abraham? He tells him to go kill his son, right? So God sometimes does things that are unfathomable to us. God does things in timing that is unfathomable to us, that is hard for us to really begin to understand why God's timing is what it is. And so I think it's this very truth that the Bible is largely about waiting on God. If you read the Psalms, over and over and over again in the Psalms, the psalmists are expressing some kind of discontent about God's plan, and yet they always come to the same conclusion, but I will wait on you, O Lord. I will wait on you. Because they place their hope in Him. Now, this is true for us as Christians. We wait for the Lord, and we have seen the fruits of the Lord, and we have seen the promises of the Lord come true. That this promise that He made to Abraham is not something that was done in isolation, but it was for a future purpose, that the Messiah, the Savior of all humankind, would come from that descendant. And years, millennia later, Jesus was born to us, and He lived a life that He was perfect, and yet He took upon Him our imperfections, and He ended up on the cross so that we could come and we could celebrate this meal. So we as Christians know the value of waiting in the Lord because we have the clear ability of hindsight to see that God fulfills His promises, even if it takes millennia. And even if we don't understand why His timing is the way that it is, we can wait because we taste the sweetness of the promise that God eagerly sets out for us to hope in. And so we continue to do that this Advent. We wait in hope for the Lord to come, but we also, in the same way, recognize that He has already come, and we come to this table ready to worship Him, ready to be in community together around this table together.